All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is Billy Crash with you here on The Last Knock, our wonderful horror podcast. As you know, we just recently hit our 300th episode. I haven't had a commitment like that in anything else in my life. But today, we have a very special guest who I'm extremely excited to have on today. Someone that might be new to the horror community. And this is a wonderful gentleman who is a novelist, and he has a new horror novel coming out. However, he comes from, well, I'll just read some of his previous title. My Life on the Swing Set, Adventures in Swinging Polyamory. And he's also part of, that's one of his titles. And he is also the announcer for Tristan Taormino's radio show, Sex Out Loud. A lot of you might know her as the Anal Advisor. So this should be a really wonderful, engaging conversation with the fabulous Cooper S. Beckett. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, and congratulations on 300 episodes. That's big.
Yeah, it's crazy. Thank you.
We're about to hit 350, and we're working out what to do with it. For 300, we did a live show, and it was a lot.
I can imagine. Oh, congratulations.
Well, thank you so much
for
having me here.
Oh, Plitch, this is wonderful. Why don't you... Where do you want to start? You want to tell people a little bit about yourself so we have a foundation?
Sure.
And then go from there?
So this book is really exciting for me. As Good as Gone is my new book, and it's my first horror novel. And it's not my first horror novel I've ever written, but it's first horror novel I've ever published. And what's really exciting is, like, I've gone on this very circuitous path through my life. And I went to school. I went to Columbia College in Chicago for film and filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Very much focused on writing horror scripts. And then I went, you know, as I was going into college, I was realizing that, you know, there's not a lot of openings in the film industry.
No.
You know, it's not so easy to get into.
No.
So I did some indie films, like real low budget type indie films with friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized how much effort and stress that was for very little payoff, because you do all this work and then what do you do with it? Where do you mm-hmm. You know, you can do the festival thing, but that's even more work, and it's politics and so
absolutely.
I became non-monogamous about a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
And once that happened, I realized that I wasn't writing, like, I wasn't blogging about my miscellaneous life stuff anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because why blog about that? It's not interesting. And non-monogamy was very interesting. So that's what led to my podcast and website, Life on the Swing Set, which was initially a swinging website.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of grew to be an all-encompassing alternative sexuality website.
Right.
And through that, I started writing again. So, like, I went from writing, and then I wrote a memoir, and then I was back to fiction. And after two books in, I guess, the non-monogamy slash erotica genre, which isn't really a genre, but I really can't put it anywhere. You know, it's not really erotica because it's more drama. I don't know. So after two books in that genre, I was looking at some of my older work, and I'd come up with this story long time ago about a ghost hunter that I really liked. And mm-hmm. I based it sort of in part on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Love
and
it.
Gregory MacDonald's Fletch books.
Oh, wow.
And
what a combination.
If you only know Fletch from the movie,
mm-hmm.
you're missing so much, because it's this wonder. It's like an 11 book series of these really taut mystery thrillers. And it's, you know, it's what you get from all the TV shows now. It's the anti-hero cad of a lead, you know. So it's that.
Right.
So that's what that was. My story was that. And as I was looking at it, it's like, well, there's good stuff here, but I just don't care about this guy anymore.
Ah, okay.
And it's because he's, you know, he's the, okay, I'm going to sleep with a new girl every book. He's James Bond, you know?
It's
that kind of lead. And I just couldn't identify with that anymore at this at this point in my life. So mm-hmm. I thought, well, what would force me to really re-examine this story? Mm-hmm. And I remembered an anecdote about the movie Alien and how Ripley doesn't have a first name until Aliens and was written as a man. And literally mm-hmm. all they did was give the role to Sigourney Weaver. They didn't change a line at all.
Right, right. Absolutely. I remember that.
And I thought that was brilliant
yeah.
because that it took away all those pitfalls of a man writing for a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. then, you know, you don't have to fem it up all over the place.
Right.
And
exactly.
So I thought, okay, well, let's do this. Like, I understand bisexuality/pansexuality because I am bisexual. Mm-hmm. I understand non-monogamous. I understand chronic pain. What if I make her, you know, a recovery, a sort of functioning alcoholic with chronic pain, who's vaguely polyamorous, who's bisexual and dealing with it? Why don't I just give her all the traits I would have given this guy?
Mm-hmm.
And write it like that. And thankfully, I have a wonderful network of women around me who are not afraid to call me on the, but women don't do that.
Yeah.
Kind of bullshit.
Right.
And I've built that up over the last two books because I had very strong lead women characters in those two also.
Mm-hmm.
And I just realized, you know, this is fun for me. This is, I get to showcase, not in a featured way, alternative sexuality, alternative lifestyles, because mm-hmm. she, you know, the fact that she's bisexual is not the plot,
right?
You
exactly.
know, the fact and horror, let's face it, well, horror and genre work at all has a really nasty habit of introducing bi or gay characters to kill them.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
So
exactly.
making her my lead was really exciting. And
excellent.
Yeah, so that was a very long-winded, circuitous path there for you.
Oh, that's fine, because I'm still awake, because it's interesting, so don't worry about it.
Good.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that whole element of what they did with the character Ripley and it even, you know, presenting a character who just, you know, happens to be bi and all. And because I've seen so many horror movies where if there is, let's say, a gay character, it's either two very attractive lipstick lesbians, you know, enjoying
sure.
life, or it's the one attractive woman who happens to have a gay male friend who's effeminate and is usually there for comic relief. But I did see, and I cannot remember any of the titles except for one. I believe one was called Animal. They had that, you know... the gay male side character who I was like, oh, okay, great. You know, here's this trope, you know, here's this character right. who's going to get creamed. And it was like, when it was time to stand up and fight, he was right there. And I'm like, all right, yeah. that's cool. It's about time. And I saw another one. It was a comedy horror where two, a gay male couple became like vampire hunters, which was great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And the last I saw was, and it was so wonderful the way they did it. It wasn't a great movie, unfortunately. It was lacking. But the lead male, the protagonist, was he was gay, and he has his lover, and he's trying to, like, aliens might be invading, and he's trying to protect himself, his family, his lover, and it was just, and he was just one cool guy. And
yeah.
and I was like, it was just so great to see how this was being presented as the character just happened to be gay, and it wasn't, there wasn't a purpose to it. There wasn't any, it was just like the person's in love and he's trying to protect his lover. That's all you need to know. And it didn't matter if, you know, gender didn't matter or, you know,
that's,
whatever.
That's great.
Yeah. I want more
and,
of that.
You know, I looked around and almost everybody I know, is some level of queer. And that's part of living an openly queer life, is you
right.
tend to surround yourself with queers. But the fact that almost everybody I know is this, and there aren't a lot of people really writing characters for this, it's still mm-hmm. some I wouldn't say it's as taboo as it used to be, but it's still fringy. It made me
right.
realize that I don't want to write about straight people anymore. You know, straight people can be incident. I'll introduce a straight person to kill them off. No, I shouldn't say that because that's shitty. I won't do that.
I love it. That's great.
But I really wanted to write characters that I could identify with, and like the main thrust of this story is not the ghost or the I'm going to be very vague about what the bad guy is in this because I'm very happy with how I obscure it throughout.
Okay,
but
cool.
The main thrust is about her relationship, the lead character Osgood, her relationship with a former working partner, former ghost hunter partner, that blew up when they were on, like a ghost hunter's show, on sci-fi. And the producers convinced Osgood to go along with hoaxing part of it.
Okay.
And she didn't tell her partner, and that split them up. So they've been separated for 15 years, and they come back together because of this mystery. And I love conflict like that. People forced into working together who used to love each other. You know, be it platonic love, be it romantic love, used to love each other, but now have this horrifying wedge between them. And
right.
So they have to work through that while dealing with the larger implications of this supernatural stuff.
That's excellent. The more layers of conflict, the better the story. So
Absolutely.
That's wonderful. Oh, that's great. I love... So this is for... the audience level, you're looking adult audience.
This adult audience.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. And is this? I love the title. As good as gone.
I came up with her name, and I just immediately thought of the first title was going to be As Good as She Gets.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's the second book title now, right?
That's actually going to be the third book.
Awesome.
Book two is called Osgood Riddance.
Oh, man.
And I just started brainstorming all these titles. It's like, I don't even know what these books are about, but this is so much fun.
That's excellent.
And that calls back to the Fletch books, which were titled like Fletch 1, W-O-N, and that was the first book in the series.
Mm-hmm.
Fletch, T-O-O was the second book. You know, so
nice.
I love that. I mean, it's silly, and it really doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's the kind of thing that can get you a second look in a crowded field. That second look is the most important thing.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Crowded field. Yeah, it seems like absolutely everything is oversaturated today.
Well, it's because it's democratized, and you know that's it's wonderful. You know, the film industry, the publishing industry, it's all come crashing down to our indie level.
Yes.
You know, and the indie level that used to be, I've scraped together $600 to make a movie this weekend, that level.
Right.
And what's really wonderful about that is, you know, you're going to get a lot of shit. The noise ratio has definitely turned up, but the signal that you're going to get is more interesting. Because, you know, when you approach a bigger publisher with this quirky story about a pansexual female ghost hunter who's, got an oxy addiction, they're like, well, what the fuck is this? I don't want to publish this. Couldn't you make him a man? Couldn't he be like, you know, a Breaking Bad type?
Oh, man.
It's like, no, this is a real person, and because they won't look at it, and this is not just me saying this because I'm a frustrated writer who sent out a whole lot of query letters early in my career, though that is true. I did send out a whole lot of query letters only to get a thank you for submitting.
Yes, exactly. I'm familiar.
And, you know, What really mattered to me was telling stories about people that I understand and know.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way to do that for us smaller indie writers, indie filmmakers, is to just go and do it. And because we can now, it's an amazing time to be a writer. It's an amazing time to be a filmmaker. Like, I've been following these... indie filmmakers on Instagram, and it's just blowing me away what they're pulling off, you know, with a DSLR as their camera or one of those tiny red cameras.
Yep.
It's unbelievable.
It really is. It's crazy. You don't have to buy tens of thousands of dollars worth of equipment or hundreds of thousands of dollars anymore. It's a whole different world. And the beauty of what you're doing is, you know, writing a book, writing a novel is like, I know filmmakers who went to novel writing because it's like, it's so much cheaper and it's so
much cheaper. And you know what? I only have to worry about myself not getting shit done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't have to worry about anyone else. That's as a former director and producer. You can hear that in my voice, can't you? I was responsible for making sure people got shit done, and then I wound up having to do it myself because they didn't get shit done.
Well, oh boy, I understand that. Oh boy, I do. Well, the interesting thing that just popped into my head is because of your, you know, film background, your love of horror, and we'll get more into that in a second. Do you have any inclinations of taking your novel and writing the script and shooting Oz, you know?
I'll tell you, if someone came to me and said, we want to make it and have funding, I would be happy to write a script. The moment funding is kind of shaky, no, I'm not getting involved at all until... Because, like, I've done that, too. Like, I've written these screenplays that go out and was like, hey, we got half the money. We're going after the other half. We're going to start shooting this month. We're going to start shooting next. And it's just unbelievably frustrating. And fiction is the only medium like this. Because, like, I can't hand someone a screenplay. Like, you know, anyone off the street, hand them a screenplay and have them really get it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, correct. Screenplays, you need to understand how screenplays work to read them. But absolutely. A novel, I can hand anyone a novel and they'll either get it, they'll like it, they won't. It doesn't, you know, it's a finished product.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas everything else I've ever tried, really, like I've written plays and all of it is not finished until everything else comes together.
Yes.
And that everything else is just so overwhelming and frustrating.
Oh, I understand. So,
but I would love to see like an Amazon series maybe and Netflix series of Osgood. That'd be pretty cool.
That would be pretty cool. So when you had this idea in your head and you're like, okay, yes. I'm gonna write my horror novel, Osgood, she's gonna rock it, you know. How did you prepare? Did you, how do you?
Well, this book has a history. So, like I said, I came up with As Good As She Gets.
Right.
And that was going to be a direct adaptation of something I'd written with this other ghost hunter 20 years ago.
Wow. Okay.
And as I was working on it, I just wasn't enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, are you familiar with the Toynbee tiles?
I will not lie. I will say, no, I'm not.
Okay, there's a wonderful documentary called Resurrect Dead, the Toynbee Tiles.
Mm-hmm.
Get your hands on it. It's this weird sort of cryptic set of tiles that has been put down in cities all over the Northeast United States. So like you find them in the street and it says Resurrect Dead, Kubrick's idea, Jupiter 2001, all that. And it's this weird thing that you don't understand, that doesn't make sense, but just tugs at that eerie, you know, that thing in you that's like, well, this could be something really sinister.
Yeah.
And it's not. I mean, ultimately, it's just some guy who was putting these down, but it could be. And so I watched that documentary, and then I had this other idea that's been in my head for literally two decades. A mystery about missing teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And the mystery was heavily influenced by an obsession I had in high school with the Paul is Dead hoax for the Beatles.
Right.
You know, where they were finding phone numbers on the albums and it was telling them, welcome to Pepperland. And it's like everything about it seemed so creepy to me. everyone else was just like, okay, so it was a bullshit hoax and it didn't really mean anything. Right. And the backward stuff was just the Beatles having a fuck off, you know?
It's,
but for whatever reason, I found it terrifying.
Hmm.
And so I put all this stuff together and I'd been trying to write this book about this thing, and it took different forms and it grew and changed. But when I saw that Toynbee Tiles documentary, I wrote the first chapter of this new book that night, and then I did the NaNoWriMo thing and I literally wrote it in a month. And for the first time, it was like I have tried to write this book six times, maybe. I've got hundreds and hundreds of pages of this story elsewhere. But for the first time, everything fell into place. And it was the realization that the mystery was the story. Mm-hmm. The investigation was the story. See, I'd always thought of it as Act 1, investigation. Act 2, something. Act 3, resolution. And the Act 2 was what freaked me out because I had no idea what that was.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized that these pulp detective novels, you know, you go back, you look at Raymond Chandler.
Yeah.
The investigation is the entire book. And then they get to the end and he shoots a guy and then the you know, it's over.
Yeah.
And so when I refocused it to look at it like that, like this is a mystery about this thing.
Mm-hmm.
All I knew is at the end they're going to confront the thing, you know. But up until then they're figuring shit out, and that changed the game completely for me. And that I think that's completely changed how I'm going to approach future books in this series, because it felt so organic. It felt like every chapter led to the next chapter, or led to the next chapter.
Right.
It was no meandering bullshit, and I stripped it down to its barest essentials.
Well, that's great. I mean, you have it's wonderful that you found that, you know, that you could unlock that, and like, since you had it swimming in your head forever, you know, that you, like, oh my gosh, I got it, and like, here it's done in a month. That's excellent.
When the problem with something swimming in your head forever, to anyone who's ever had that, is you put so much baggage on it.
Yeah.
And it's like all this stuff, like there are these ideas I love that are nowhere in this book, but I loved them when I wrote them, and I needed to do like a cleanse to get rid of all the shit that had piled up around this story, because otherwise it was never getting written.
Yeah, no, I get it. And the good thing is now, because you know these characters, you know, you love them, you trust them, and now now you'll probably just run amok with the second book as well, just, you know, seeing what they do and where they go and how they interact.
And I'm very excited about doing a series with these. Like, I love that.
That's like, so how long are you going to... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go on.
No, how long are you going to give yourself downtime before you dive into number two?
I already started writing the second. I shouldn't do that either, because I'm still, you know, like, as an indie publisher, there's a lot to do between now and when the book is released on April 22nd. But I've already started writing. I don't know what's wrong with me. Honestly, though, I think what I'm doing right now is I'm taking runs at it. Mm-hmm. Like, I've written three first chapters, and I like the newest one the best, and maybe that will be the one that gets me into the story.
Gotcha.
And so I want to have another one this year. I think this is the kind of thing where I could have another book this year without too much trouble.
Excellent.
And I've got a good idea of what book two is about. I just need to flesh it out now. So I'm excited about it, which is what's key, obviously.
Well, I'm excited about it because you're excited about it.
Exactly. That's the best, isn't it? When you talk to someone who's excited about something.
Absolutely. So for horror fans, you know, what can they look forward to about your world?
Well, I did, you know, this is a mashup between pulpy detective noir.
I love it.
And cosmic horror.
That's great.
And, you know, like, my favorite things, you know, like, I love dream sequences and stories because I love dream logic. And I'm always disappointed when people use dream sequences but don't use dream logic. You know, because dream logic means that if you have a scene that's playing out in a dream and it could as well be not a dream, then why are you writing a dream? Because the dream is about people being there that shouldn't be there, symbolic things showing up and going away. And one of the things that I love the most about this, and I can tell you this without spoiling the monster.
That's good.
Is so Prudence Osgood, she was in a car accident 20 years prior.
Okay.
At this little intersection in the middle of nowhere with a blinking, you know, the kind with the blinking yellow light at the intersection, just that. And so every night she returns to that intersection. And every night in her dreams, she dies at that intersection.
Wow.
And so her coping mechanism is to get blackout drunk so she doesn't remember her dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Because then, you know, it's not a good strategy, but it's a strategy.
It's a coping mechanism when none others are
and
available.
And so as this story begins, as she's getting pulled into this mystery, things sort of are coming out of that dream that weren't initially part of it.
Right.
And one of it is this sculpture she saw years ago that's just a giant screaming thing, a mouth wide open. So she sees this in her dreams, and now that's terrifying, but she doesn't know why it's terrifying.
Right.
Like things in dreams. And then another dream, she sees a quasar in the sky just above the intersection. A quasar that trains its sights on her and pulls her toward the event horizon. Another thing that's terrifying, but we don't know why. And that's what I really like about dreams. And you can go with it's symbolic of eating. It's symbolic of devouring. You know, a black hole is no different from a large mouth. You know.
Oh yeah.
So. Layering this stuff in as we go and learn more and more about the mystery was such a great way to play with that story and reveal more backstory on Osgood's character.
Well, I love it already just because, you know, we talked about how, you know, independent horror and, you know, there's great stuff to discover, but there's a lot of shit you have to swim through.
Yeah.
And usually one of the problems I have is, to me, you know, you have to have a great story and you have to have great characters that inhabit that story. And as soon as I see, so many times I put on a movie and all I see is it begins with five college kids in a car. It's like, oh, here we go. Right. And I can't believe how many. I've seen like 100 of them. And it's like every time. And it's like, why? And that's why I enjoyed The Cabin in the Woods. You know, Whedon, it's like, well, we're going to have the jock who's got a brain. We're going to have, you know, it's like we're going to do things different. And that was great. And already I could tell, like, Osgood, it's like, you know, I'm actually envisioning her in my head already.
That's wonderful.
So, and I love it because I know your character has depth. And that's just only going to enhance the story. And she's not a throwaway character. And I have no doubt that none of your characters are throwaways. No red shirts.
I hope so.
Oh, that's fantastic. So what type, are there any particular horror writers or horror filmmakers that inspire you? Or?
Well, I mean, it's the most cliche thing in the world. Oh, but here I'm we go. The biggest Stephen King fan ever.
You're the biggest one ever?
Ever. Yeah, I'm his biggest fan. The one thing I do collect is Stephen King hardcover first editions.
Whoa, that's a collection. That's something else.
I've got probably 75% of his books in hardcover first edition. And you know what I love about him is, and it's the thing movies almost inevitably always get wrong about his work, and it's that the depth of the story is not the horror. The depth of the story is the emotional stuff between the characters.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at a book like 11-22-63, I think I got that date right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a time travel book about stopping the Kennedy assassination.
Mm-hmm.
But a good 200 pages of it is this character sitting around in a small town in the late 50s as an English teacher, falling in love, and you find yourself getting so attached to these people. And King does banal small town better than anybody else and makes you care more than anyone I've ever read. And what I love about, you know, you can get anything in horror. Mm-hmm. Any type of genre can exist within horror. You can have comedy, you can have sex, you can have Western, all of it can fall under the horror umbrella, and you can't do that in other genres.
Absolutely.
Like, you can't have a comedy where suddenly someone has an alien burst out of their chest and take it seriously.
Yeah.
Exactly. But in an alien movie, you can have funny scenes, and that's mm-hmm. okay. And so it's unbelievable what horror can do. Like, you know, I love Clive Barker. I've been reading a lot of smaller publication horror lately, mm-hmm. Just to see what the indies are doing. And it's really refreshing to see all the various horror coming out now. And it's hard to keep up with. Honestly, one of the coolest things I read, I'm going to look it up to make sure I get the author's name right.
Sure. I'll just hum until we get. That's fine. It's fine. Yeah, okay. This will be edited out later. Yeah.
Awesome. And actually, one of the coolest things I read that I just stumbled across, I think it was a recommendation on Instagram again, was. A book of poetry called I Am Not Your Final Girl.
Oh, I love
Claire
it.
Claire C. Holland.
Well, I'm sorry, what was the author's name again?
Claire C. Holland.
Oh, man.
And it's brilliant, and it's like the perfect encapsulation of what horror can contain, mm-hmm. because it is a book of poetry, and it's a book of poetry from the point of view of famous final girl, Sally from Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Man.
That was my favorite one in there. But it's also a feminist tract because so many of these final girls are built up to be capable but still women.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
And what it's kind of taking you through the fact that we've sort of made it seem like horror is great because it exemplifies the strong woman. And it does, but it also objectifies the strong woman and forces her into a box, mm-hmm. and sexualizes her in a way that she shouldn't need to be sexualized. If mm-hmm. it's part of the character, fine.
Right,
you know, there's
exactly.
nothing wrong with sexualizing. But I really loved that book, and I bought it for several people because it's just a great collection of poetry, and you know, it's awesome because it comes from our final girl, Laurie Strode and Nancy Thompson, and you know, it's just one.
Another great title.
Yeah, also a great title, and one of those books that sort of looks like a VHS tape, you know, with the stickers on it, and like, that is one of my favorite stylistic things that people are doing now, is just looking like the way the horror section looked at your local when grocery stores had horror sections. You remember back then?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Like, my mother would go shopping, and I would just stare at the cover of Friday the 13th 4 and wonder who the weird alien in the movie was. Because Corey Feldman's got that alien head on the back cover. And that, what is that? That's misrepresentation of the movie.
Oh, man. Oh.
But horror has been a part of me forever. You know, I love this genre so much. And it has been especially important to me in the last 2+ years. When, you know, in November a few years ago, something really bad happened.
Okay.
And to our country, I'm saying.
Well, I understand.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
So because of that, I have found incredible catharsis in horror. And I've always found catharsis in horror, but more so than ever before. So I've been going through and just any horror that is vaguely interesting to me, I'll grab. I saw this wonderful film called Hell House LLC.
Yes.
It was an amazing found footage horror movie, considering how difficult found footage is to do anymore. And just I'm going through these different genres and seeing all this different stuff. Prevenge. Have you seen Prevenge?
Prevenge? No.
Prevenge. It's amazing. Alice Lowe is this writer-director in England. And she's also the star of the movie. And it's a woman who's pregnant, her unborn child is telling her to murder people.
That's right. This has been on my list since it came out.
Oh, my God. It is so good. It's quirky and weird. And she is just an amazing screen presence.
No, that's great.
And that's really what I love about horror is people take risks. You know, they're not afraid to be weird because you're already watching horror.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not afraid to be silly. Like, my favorite independent horror possibly ever is Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon.
That's a fantastic movie.
It's unbelievable.
That's excellent.
And it understands the genre better than every spoof of the genre I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And because you understand the genre, you can make a movie that's simultaneously funny and terrifying when it needs to be.
Oh, absolutely.
And that is just such a wonderful thing. And what I really am attracted to in horror, I hope I achieved with Osgood, is creating a story that you do find their banter funny, you know, because like the best stuff in Buffy is the banter.
Oh yeah.
And at the same time, you are terrified when they come face to face with a true horror, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What Joss Whedon did, there was a wonderful paper. I have a copy of it somewhere. Someone wrote for grad school or a doctoral program, the Lexicon of Buffy. And the whole show was just like, you know, he was just creating these catchphrases and this whole new, and I mean,
it
was
changed the game.
Yeah. Oh man, I was so addicted. I was so addicted to that show. Even Angel, I just like, I couldn't get
without
out of.
Was.
Yeah. Oh man. No, that's excellent. I like how you think, because I don't want. Like I said, you know, next time I put in a movie and I see those kids in the car, it's like, I'm like, nope, next, you know, it's like, I want something different. You know, I'm a horror geek. Listeners know I have a master list of all the horror movies I've ever seen. It has over 2,600 entries right now.
Oh, very nice.
Oh, thank you. It's like, only 83 of them I consider them to be some of, you know, the greatest horror films ever made, and the rest are just, you know.
Well, let me ask you.
Mm-hmm.
If you balls to the wall, you have to make a decision.
Mm.
What is the greatest horror movie ever made?
That is, I'll give you my answer in a second, because you've already talked about the film. I try to break it up now into all those wonderful subcategories, like you said, because there's so many. But the original Alien, just the interchange between the characters are it's so fantastic. The element of isolation, you know, facing the uncanny, and it's like, well, there's nowhere to go. It's like, it's a beautiful thing. You know, I really enjoy it, and that's just, I'll watch that several times a year. I have a lot of horror movies, but. Yeah, that one is just, it's just the element of atmosphere, the music, it's just all the right combinations for me.
Well, my pure horror would probably come down to Halloween.
Really?
Pure horror. Mm. But.
But.
If allowed, I would.
You
go
are
Silence
allowed.
Of Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs, you consider that a horror movie?
I do. I mean, that is a slasher movie as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
And I feel it's a discredit to the film to not call it a horror movie. It's like they're afraid to admit what it truly is. And it's like, all you have to do is go on YouTube and look up the original trailers for it before it became this blockbuster Academy Award winner. It was a dirty, pulpy, violent slasher movie. And that's how they sold it. And that's what it is. And it just also happens to be brilliant on every other level.
Well, if they called it a horror movie, they probably wouldn't have that cast. You know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah.
You know, because, you know, horror has such, it's the disposable genre. You know, it's
I'm really happy that people are, I mean, at least some people are respecting it a lot more. Like seeing Jamie Lee in Halloween again this past year was wonderful. I do wish Renee Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey would come to terms with the fact that they were in The Return of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and record a commentary, because wouldn't that be amazing?
That would be something to listen to. I remember watching that going, what the hell's going on? How did this happen? You know, did they owe somebody money? I mean, like, I couldn't believe it. But... Yeah, well, I think, you know, Jordan Peele with Get Out, I think he...
oh, God, yeah. He's and I love that he just tweeted, Us is a horror movie, because everyone's trying to put it in thriller or suspense. He's like, no, fuck you all. I made a horror movie. Deal with it.
Yeah, I hope to see it this weekend.
Me too. Yeah, I've already got my tickets for Thursday.
That's excellent. Yeah, well, that's the thing, you know, it's... you know, we've actually done, I think, two shows on, you know, horror movies that aren't, you know, either somebody says this is a horror movie and it's not, or we do the reverse where it's like, this isn't listed as a horror movie, but it should be.
Right.
And trying to define horror is just on its, I mean, you could have, well, you might just go batshit crazy trying to come up with it, or go through a whole bunch of fights with other people who disagree with the...
Right. You know. I mean, you have Alien.
Yeah.
And you know, that bestrides sci-fi and horror.
Mm-hmm.
It's very definitely a horror film.
Oh, yeah.
But it's very much a sci-fi movie. Absolutely. And then Aliens is sci-fi in action.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. So what's Osgood? Paranormal?
I'm calling it a novel of supernatural horror. That's where I'm going with it.
Right.
I was titling it a thriller, but then I thought again, well, no, it's a horror book, and it should be a horror book.
Good.
I want it to be a horror book.
Or else she wouldn't be on his show.
That's right. Well, I might, because horror is awesome. I would love to just talk horror.
Well, you can right now. So how did it start for you as a kid? Because you said you've loved horror forever. I mean, what?
I can pinpoint it.
Let's go. Let's
okay,
hear it.
So... it's got to be 1988 or 87, right around there. I'm 8.
Mm-hmm.
And Halloween 2 is on CBS, I want to say.
Okay.
And my parents have a little 12-inch TV in their bedroom. And they're downstairs, and I'm upstairs. I should be in bed.
Uh-huh, one of these deals.
I keep
deals.
Going in to their bedroom and turning on the TV and watching these little bits of Halloween 2. And I saw when he stabbed the nurse in the back of the neck and lifted her up and her shoes fell off.
Yeah.
And that was ingrained in me.
Mm.
And I had always, you know, like, I loved scary stuff, but I would have the worst nightmares. So I wasn't allowed to watch scary stuff because I'd be up all night. So, like, even Beetlejuice freaked me out when I first saw that.
I can understand that.
There's scary shit in there.
Yes, there is.
And so it was partially because I wasn't allowed.
Yeah.
And so I had to get around this stuff. Like, I remember watching Nightmare on Elm Street 1 and 4 at a friend's house that he had taped off of WGN's late night movie. And so it's the, you know, it's the TV cut.
Yeah.
And it's, I think that's what it is. There's something seedy and dangerous about horror in general. And I think so many of us come to it from that perspective of having to hide it. Mm-hmm. And it's like sexuality in that way. You want to see it more because it's forbidden.
Right.
And I fell in love so quickly. And I remember, you remember West Coast Video?
Yes, I do.
My first job before I was legally old enough to work was for a local West Coast Video where the guy wanted someone to clean out the back room. And he paid me in videos. And I got paid a video per hour.
Man, that's awesome.
Jesus Christ, I cleaned up the entire Friday the 13th series, you know, and like all these were just stacked in my closet because I couldn't keep them with the other VHS tapes.
Please tell me you still have them.
No, I don't.
Oh!
I don't. I'm, you know, it's the hardest thing in the world, but I'm trying so hard to do the I don't need stuff.
No, I get it.
But I do have a signed Laserdisc of Ghostbusters signed by Harold Ramis.
Oh, man, that's awesome. How the hell did that happen?
I met him at a screenwriting conference.
Nice.
He signed that, and he signed my copy of, there was this great illustrated screenplay of Ghostbusters. And he signed that too. It was one of the best, you know, celebrity experiences I've ever had.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah. Oh, man. No, I love physical media. And, you know, when I, anytime it's like, I'm, you know, thinking about making a movie or whatever, it's like, I always love the behind the scenes material because that's like a free film class. And, you know, and, I've had digital files. It's like, oh, you lost your movie. It's like, well, I own a hard copy. I don't have to, I'm okay. You know, I don't need your digital crap. You know,
I've got this crazy Plex setup going where I have mirrored hard drives and thousands of movies. What I love about it is I don't have to go in, like I can pause the movie in the living room and go to the bedroom and finish it.
Well, that's
because
nice.
Unfortunately, my partner Ophelia, she has lost her appetite for horror.
How come?
I think she, you know, I have the world is awful, so I want to see something that I know is fake.
Okay.
And I can feel the catharsis.
Right.
Because there's no catharsis in the awful real world.
No, there isn't.
Catharsis happens in the fake world. And unfortunately, I think she went the opposite way, as she can't handle any more bad, whether it has catharsis on it or not.
Gotcha. I understand that.
Last night, I'm in a polyamorous triad, and it was our anniversary last night, our third anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I'm jealous, but
a long lifespan for triad. And we were talking about it. Well, what do you want to watch? And our girlfriend said, I want to watch Black Swan.
Oh, I love Black Swan.
Because neither of them had seen Black Swan, and you know, I talked about Black Swan, and I'm like, okay, now I just want to let you know what you're getting into.
Because it's a horror movie.
It is a horror movie, and it's body horror.
Yes, it
is. It's rough. It's very good, but it's rough.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we watched Black Swan. That's probably the closest to horror I've watched with her in a long time.
Oh, that was
a
beautiful
film. But like she saw the preview for Us, and she's like, yeah, it looks amazing. I'm not going to see it. Like, okay, I won't push you to see it as long as you don't mind me going to see it. Because I'm going to go see it. But no.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful that, you know, I hope she enjoyed it. I hope.
Oh, yeah. No, they both really, really liked that.
Excellent.
But, you know, you need to put on Parks and Recreation after that just to cleanse the palate a little bit. Maybe some Bob's Burgers.
Oh, man, yeah.
Evens you out.
Another movie. I remember I was at the theater, and it's rare. I could probably name the four or five times out of watching, I don't know, a million motion pictures of, you know, yelling at the screen. And I remember Black Swan, and I'm watching it, and I'm really engaged, and, you know, things are happening, and I just yelled, this is a horror movie, because nobody, because it's like, it's not listed as that. And I'm like,
no, it's not.
It's a horror
movie. No, it's the ballet movie.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's a suspenseful drama. It's like it's a freaking horror movie. Come on.
Yeah, what was really cool is recently I watched the remake of Suspiria.
Yes.
And I was very impressed with it because I did not think I would like it. I'd heard some middling things.
I enjoyed it, yeah.
But I really liked what they did. I'm not completely sold on the ending, but I really liked what they did up to there.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately when I was done with it, it's like, man, this would make an incredible double feature with Black Swan.
Oh, yeah.
And then this past weekend, I'm watching Gaspar Noé's Climax.
I haven't seen that one yet.
It's another dance horror movie.
Oh, man.
And so what's amazing about that one is it does, like, the first act is almost entirely a dance. And so you're seeing this really impressive, like, free-form but choreographed dance.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're done with the rehearsal, and now they're going to have a party. And somebody has spiked the punch with LSD.
And then they enter the movie The Void, right?
Yeah, good Lord. We don't see the hallucinations, but we see what happens as their society. Like, it's Lord of the Flies, suddenly.
Oh, man.
I love Gasper. It was rough, but yeah. Again... would make an excellent pairing with Black Swan and
Triple
Suspiria.
Feature. Yeah. Triple feature. Oh,
I mean,
man.
You might want to kill yourself after it, but it goes well together.
Dancing to your own grave. Oh, man. Oh, that's funny. Oh, man. I love it. Oh, Gaspar. Oh, I love how he takes chances.
It was actually my first Gaspar film.
Oh boy, you are missing out. You see Irreversible.
Well,
we gotta
know
talk.
I know I can't watch Irreversible.
Oh, that's...
I know it's
one of the most disturbing films ever made. But I think phenomenal storytelling.
And
phenomenal.
Like, I know enough about it to know it's probably wonderful. But incredible. I wouldn't make it through the opening. I know that about myself. And it's like the first time I left Hostel. Mm-hmm. With my ex-wife, I left Hostel, and I turned to her and I said, am I just getting too old for this? Because it was so viscerally upsetting. And like, I can do that sometimes.
Right.
Like, there are definite moments in all three of the films we just mentioned,
mm-hmm.
that are viscerally upsetting. But I can take horror brutality,
right?
You know, supernatural brutality,
mm-hmm.
far better than I can take real brutality,
right?
It's the same reason I stopped watching House of Cards once Trump was elected. I didn't need a fake, awful, evil president. I had a perfectly fine, real, awful, evil president.
Yeah.
So
life imitating art.
Yeah, and so that's what makes me understand why my partner Ophelia can't watch horror anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because like there are little things that I just can't do. I watched half of Mike Flanagan's Hush.
Okay.
And Mike Flanagan is an excellent filmmaker. I think mm-hmm. he's one of the best horror filmmakers working today.
It's a good movie.
And for whatever reason, I was getting that just like incredible, intense knot in my stomach.
Right.
And I couldn't finish it. And it mm-hmm. wasn't because it was bad. It was wonderful. But I couldn't do it. And mm-hmm. so I never know when that's going to happen in a movie. But knowing how Irreversible begins, I know I couldn't make it through it.
No, I understand.
I want
to
see Beyond the Void. That one seems like it's up my alley.
Yeah, that you could handle. But don't watch the original Martyrs, the French film. I
actually just did. And
well, then you can handle anything, man.
Well, no. If I think I don't know. I'm surprised I survived Martyrs. I put it off forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I had it on my Plex server. It's just like, one of these days I'm gonna watch it. And the first time I tried, it didn't have subtitles. And so it's just like, okay, today is not that day. I think what changed with Martyrs was because it wasn't what I thought it was.
Okay.
Like, I knew it was somewhat of a revenge story. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect that to be Act One.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I think the horrors inflicted in the second half of the movie are not justified, not made up for in any way, because horrors against people are horrible, obviously.
Right.
But the denouement of that movie, the final line of that movie, made it worth it in a horrible way.
Yes, it did. One of the greatest end lines of all time.
Really. And so, like, I went back and forth watching this movie. Like, I'd pick up my iPad and start doing a crossword puzzle and just like, oh man, I am not enjoying this, or what are they doing? This is weird. And I think I've come down on the side of I liked it.
I loved it.
I don't ever need to see it again.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
But yeah, but you know what? That was right up there with when people would tell me about Irreversible and Audition. That one I haven't seen.
Oh my god!
But I've heard the same thing about that one. Is it's just so viscerally upsetting.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because Hostel didn't work for me at all. I thought the whole thing was a joke to me. It didn't have any. There wasn't enough reality to it for me to care about the characters. I was like, sure. This is all, you know, so it just didn't work. But Irreversible and Audition's phenomenal by Mike in so many ways. And, it's like, it's not that I could necessarily watch these movies all the time. It's not like you could have like, hey, I'm going to have a Martyrs party. But yeah, let's
can't
go.
Can't have a marathon of this kind of movie.
Yeah, bring the chips, man. It'll be great. Yay. You know, it's like it's not going to be a fun time, you know.
But you know what? I rewatched The Last House on the Left remake.
Okay.
The Horror Queers podcast.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about it on Twitter, and I realized I hadn't seen it in a long time.
Right.
And I remember being middling on it, but really liking Sarah Paxton, because Sarah Paxton is hot as hell.
Yes, she
is. And she's, I love, delicious. Garfunkel and Oates. So, you know, it's just like, you know, there's this great symbiosis. But what I love is I love a good revenge movie.
Yeah.
And like, if I was deprived of the revenge, I wouldn't have liked it. And that's my problem with Funny Games. Is,
oh God, yeah.
The fourth wall moment.
Oh,
the rewinding the film moment. I said, fuck you.
Yes, so did I.
Turn the movie off. It's like, you don't get to take back catharsis. That's not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I get why, because you want it. I get it, but fuck it. I don't want it.
I'm so with you, man.
And, you know, someone just posted that still of them with the shotgun and the remote on Instagram, and I was like, fuck no, this is bullshit. this is cheating.
Oh yeah,
you can't in the middle of a serious movie decide, oh no, we're just in a movie. And no, it's like, no cheating.
Well, that's bullshit. That's why he did it.
Yeah, I know. And apparently, so the remake and the original are the same, right? It was the same filmmaker.
Yeah, shot for shot.
Okay.
One's with
so
Naomi Watts.
I saw the remake because I love Naomi Watts and I love Tim Roth.
Yep.
And I love, oh, shit, the kid.
Oh, my God, Michael.
He was in Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Oh, my God, I love that movie. I just pre-ordered that.
It's me too!
Criterion.
I just saw John Cameron Mitchell's tour.
Oh, you! Oh, I'm jealous of you.
From
man.
The third row, he body surfed at the end, and my partner, I have a picture of her holding his hand as he's body surfing. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, Michael Pitt, and congratulations!
Yes.
I'm jealous of you again.
And he's excellent. Michael Pitt is like everything about that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But that moment was just like, nope.
Oh yeah,
no.
I yelled "fuck you" like you did, and I think, you know, Michael Haneke, if he were in the room, would be like, exactly.
That's what I wanted from you.
Yes, it's like, great.
Like, well,
now, Greg, buy me dinner,
you
man.
You succeeded. I'm never watching it again.
Oh, yeah, that
And I'm
movie.
not recommending it to friends.
Exactly. Oh, that movie got under my skin, man. It really did. That was so. I was like, kill him. And Tim Roth is so
Yeah.
impotent. His character was so impotent in that. I was just like, oh,
So good.
God.
But so Last House on the Left gave me the catharsis.
Gotcha. Yeah,
And
yeah, yeah.
in a wonderful way compared to the original Last House on the Left, which sort of gives catharsis, but I don't even know what the fuck that original movie was. I don't know how it's a classic. I don't know how
I agree.
Wes Craven still had a career after that. That movie was a pile of garbage.
And I say it's garbage because he had this great tension building, and he would always like, okay, let's have the bumbling cops come
Yeah,
in. And I was,
cut to the cops who are in a completely different movie.
yeah, and I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you letting the audience off the hook? And that's exactly what he did. That really got me angry. I hated the movie because of that. You know, it's like don't do that. Keep it amped and make it real horror, you know? Just
And the real stuff, like the intense stuff, was intense as hell.
yeah.
And seeing I saw the director's cut of the remake, and man, that rape scene is brutal.
Yes, it is.
And this is where you go with the irreversible. It's like, okay, irreversible starts with this intense, brutal rape scene.
Actually, it
So
doesn't start there.
it doesn't start there?
Oh, no.
I
You
thought it started
really
there and worked backwards.
know it works backwards, but it doesn't start there. And it is
Oh.
a very compelling film. When Gasper would watch the movie in theaters when it first came out, and the reason I saw the film is because I read that it premiered at Cannes Film Festival, and people were booing and walking out. And I'm like, the French love cinema. I have to see this movie because there's got to be a good reason for it. And when he would sit in the theater, he said all these bikers and stuff would come up to him and say, "We're gonna fucking kill you outside." And all of these women came up to him and said, "Thank you.
Really?
You need to see this movie."
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's yeah, it's amazing, and I'm not saying you're gonna feel good after it, but
Right.
you know, once you know, it was it as a writer and all, as a creative person, it really had a major impact on me for storytelling. And but yeah, only if you're comfortable. You know, I don't want you to like, you know, you must watch this film. I won't do
Well,
that
I mean, it's another one that's sitting on my computer. So
to
it could happen any moment. Like, I did not expect to just randomly watch Martyrs last weekend. But I did. So, could happen.
But let you know, we're winding down.
Yes.
So let's get back to your Osgood horror novel. Tell people where they could find it, where it's going to be. It's coming out April 22nd.
April 22nd, it's going to be available on all the major channels, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, everything like that. I am an indie publisher, so I do very much appreciate it if you buy it direct from me. And you can do that by going to osgoodasgone.com or spectralinspector.com.
I love it.
You can buy all my books at cooperSbeckett.com as well.
Yeah, great website.
The paperback and ebook are coming out the 22nd, and the audiobook is going to be shortly thereafter. I'm
Wow.
aiming for by May 20th, but we may be able to get it sooner. I've already got my narrator in place. We are just waiting for the locked manuscript now.
That's fantastic. I mean,
I'm excited.
creating your own audiobook, talk about an expense. That's
When and I've done audiobooks for all for my other three books.
I
The
noticed.
thing is, now I don't feel comfortable narrating a book that's entirely from the point of view of a woman.
Right.
It feels like that would be cheating for me.
No, I understand. I understand. Oh, that's great. So that'll be out April 22nd, and I'm looking forward to it, and I hope other horror fans are. And just so people know, you could this is the Last Knock Horror Podcast. You could find this on iTunes as well as CrashPalaceProductions.com, where we have other wonderful interviews with horror writers and many other wonderful souls.
So, I got one more thing.
Yes. Sorry. That's okay, because I'm going to have one more thing to ask you after your one more thing.
Excellent. You should follow Spectral Inspector on Instagram.
Oh, cool.
Because I'm putting a lot of shit on Instagram for this book.
And you better like it.
Yes, like it. Follow it. Like it.
Okay. Now I get to ask you my final question, which yes. everyone hates.
Okay.
All right, here it is. Now, you this is might be actually easy for you, because from what you told me, you haven't really done, you know, many interviews yet about the book and all. But
I haven't, no.
What do you wish, it might work here actually, what do you wish an interviewer had asked you? Something that you really wanted to answer and talk about in an interview but didn't get a chance to. So now's your chance to go right to that. What would that be? What do you want to say?
That's a tough one.
That's what I usually get.
Well, what I always like talking about in interviews is putting yourself in characters.
Okay.
And I am a fan of putting my least favorite things about myself and making them major character traits of my characters.
I love it. That's awesome.
Well, because I feel like if I put the positive things about myself and make them major character traits, to use a fun term, flogging the bishop.
Yeah.
But if I use my negative traits, then I get to approach them the way the other characters might approach those negative traits in people. And I feel like it is what has allowed me to create more realistic characters. All my characters have always been broken in some way.
Mm-hmm. And best characters
I feel
are.
Like that's essential.
Yes, I
for
agree.
A good character.
Oh, absolutely.
And they may not be broken by the end, but it's only through working. They need to work through the shards.
Yeah.
And I think that's key, especially in horror, because then, you know, you can't just have the white hat ride in Ugh. And save the day, because that's, you know, that's not good horror.
No.
And you also can't just have all bad characters, because nope. that's just slasher movies, and it's really hard to make yeah. a really good one of those, because usually they're pretty shitty.
Well said.
But we like them anyway, right? You know, like I judge Friday the 13th Part 6 very differently than I would judge, let's say, Silence of the Lambs.
Well, okay.
Because 6 is amazing.
I haven't watched that in so
long. Well, 6, just to refresh, 6, first of all, is the only one that was written and directed by the same guy. That's big.
Mm-hmm.
That means he had a story he wanted to tell.
Right, exactly.
And 6 is the one that opens with zooming in on Jason's eye and then having yeah. him walk into the screen and slit the screen and have it bleed like a James Bond opening. 6 knows exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And it
yeah.
doesn't apologize for it once.
I love it.
And that's why I like 6.
All right. Well, I'm going to watch it again just because of you.
Give it another go.
I will. And speaking of going, we are going, Cooper, and I definitely want you back on.
I would love to come back on.
The door is always open for you. You don't have to knock. How about that?
Ooh.
No, but I seriously, I wish you much success with the book, and looking to continuing our conversation in other venues.
Sounds good. All Have right. a great day.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.